The stench of the underhive assaulted my enhanced olfactory senses, even through my power armor's filtration systems. Mordian Prime's Hive Secundus had always been a festering wound on the planet's surface, but the recent gene-stealer infestation had transformed it into something far worse. As I led my battle brothers of the Crimson Fist's fourth company through the toxic corridors, my mind cataloged the environmental threats automatically. Methane pockets, radiation hotspots, chemical spills that could corrode ceramite given enough exposure. My enhanced transhuman memory flickered with images from 3 centuries of service as I advanced. The weight of my power armor felt as natural as my own skin after so many years. My bolt pistol remained steady in my right hand, power fist humming with lethal energy on my left. Every step was measured, every motion economical, the product of centuries of training and combat experience. My squad formation spread out in practice patterns through the underhive tunnels. Through my helmet display, tactical data streamed constantly. Brother Marius and his tactical squad secured our left flank, while Brother Tiberius led the Devastators covering our rear approach. I transmitted adjustment commands through our encrypted Vox network, shifting our formation to account for the narrowing passage ahead. My mind briefly flashed to my first deployment as a newly minted battle brother, the Orc invasion of Badlanding. I had been young then, barely 50 years old, filled with righteous fury rather than the cold, calculated precision I now employed. The memory vanished as quickly as it had come as my Auspex registered movement ahead. The Underhive's labyrinthine structure worked against us. Centuries of unplanned construction had created a maze of corridors, chambers, and crawl spaces, perfect territory for the cult to stage ambushes. My enhanced hearing detected subtle movements beyond normal human perception, the scraping of chitin against metal, the soft breathing of creatures attempting to remain hidden. I signaled a halt with a clenched fist, my battle brothers freezing in place with the discipline that made the Astartes the Emperor's finest. The Auspex readings grew stronger, multiple signatures converging on our position from concealed maintenance ducts and access panels. I transmitted tactical adjustments, positioning Brother Varro's squad to create a crossfire zone, while Brother Quintus prepared his flamer for close quarters combat. The first hybrid emerged from a ventilation shaft above, a grotesque fusion of human and Xenos that offended every tenet of Imperial doctrine. Its skull was elongated, its skin a mottled purple, its hands transformed into vicious claws. I dispatched it with a precise bolt round through its misshapen head before it could fully emerge from the shaft. That single shot triggered the ambush. Panels burst open along the corridor as cult hybrids poured forth, their bodies twisted by Xeno's corruption. Some still resembled the human miners they had once been, while others had progressed further along the gene-stealer life cycle, their humanity almost entirely subsumed by alien physiology. My transhuman mind processed the battlefield in microseconds. I transmitted targeting priorities as I engaged the nearest hybrid with my power fist, the energized gauntlet pulverizing its torso in a spray of ichor and bone fragments. Brother Quintus unleashed his flamer, bathing the corridor ahead in promethium fire that consumed a cluster of advancing cultists. The battle expanded in all directions as more hybrids emerged from hidden compartments. My bolt pistol cycled continuously, each mass reactive shell finding its target with transhuman precision. 3 centuries of combat experience guided every shot, every movement, every tactical decision. A memory surfaced unbidden, kneeling before Chapter Master Pedro Cantor as he bestowed the rank of captain upon me. His weathered face had shown pride, but also the weight of responsibility that accompanied command. I had sworn then to uphold the honor of the Crimson Fists, to lead my battle brothers with wisdom and courage until death claimed me. The memory dissolved as a mining laser punctured the shoulder guard of Brother Titus to my right. The superheated beam vaporized ceramite and the flesh beneath, yet Titus continued firing his bolter with his remaining arm, his pain suppressed by his Astartes conditioning. I voxed commands for the Devastators to reposition, targeting the source of the mining lasers. The Underhive's architecture worked against us, the narrow corridors prevented us from bringing our full firepower to bear, while the cult used their intimate knowledge of the environment to strike from unexpected angles. The first laser hit my armor at the joint between my chest plate and right pauldron. The The beam punched through the ceramite with terrifying ease, superheating the interface with my black carapace and searing the enhanced muscle beneath. My Astartes physiology immediately compensated, blocking pain signals and releasing combat stimulants into my bloodstream. I continued directing the battle even as a second laser struck my left leg, the beam severing the limb at mid-thigh. I registered the damage clinically, adjusting my stance to compensate as my Laramen cells rushed to seal the wound. My bolt pistol continued to cycle, each shot finding its mark even as my tactical display showed more hybrids converging on our position. The third laser struck my torso. This time the damage was catastrophic. The beam cored through my primary heart and left lung, vaporizing tissue and cooking organs in its path. I felt my secondary heart accelerate to compensate, but the damage was too severe. System failures cascaded through my body as I collapsed against the corroded metal wall of the underhive corridor. My enhanced hearing registered the sounds of battle continuing around me. Brother Marius had assumed tactical command, his voice steady over the vox as he directed our forces. I attempted to raise my bolt pistol, but my arm refused to respond, the neural connections severed by the damage to my spine. As I lay there, my transhuman memory activated again, this time showing me my induction into the chapter. I had been a boy from the hive world of Nova Thulium, chosen for my genetic compatibility and physical potential. The trials had been brutal, designed to test not just strength and endurance, but resolve and character. Many had failed, their bodies broken or their minds shattered by the challenges. I had persevered, earning my place among the Emperor's finest through blood and suffering. The implantation process had transformed me, each of the 19 gene seed organs reshaping my physiology into something more than human. The pain had been beyond description, but I had embraced it, understanding that suffering was the forge in which the Adeptus Astartes were created. My vision darkened as my enhanced metabolism struggled to compensate for catastrophic damage. Blood pooled beneath me, my Laramen cells overwhelmed by the severity of my wounds. I could feel my primary systems shutting down one by one, my transhuman physiology fighting a losing battle against entropy. Another memory surfaced, a conversation with Chaplain Xavius during the aftermath of the Badlanding campaign. We had stood before the sarcophagus of ancient Torven, a venerable dreadnought who had fallen during the defense of our fortress monastery. Xavius had spoken of the honor of entombment, of continuing to serve the chapter even after the body had failed. I had expressed hope that when my time came, I might be judged worthy of such an honor rather than final death. The irony was not lost on me as I lay dying in the toxic underhive, far from the fortress monastery of my chapter. There would be no sarcophagus for me, no continuation of service. Only the cold embrace of death and the knowledge that my progenitor glands would allow something of me to live on in future battle brothers. My enhanced hearing detected the approach of Apothecary Thule, his armor marked with the distinctive white of his office. His movements were efficient as he knelt beside me, his narthesium already extended to perform the sacred duty of retrieving my gene seed. His face remained impassive behind his helmet, but I could read regret in his body language as he assessed my condition and found it beyond salvation. My thoughts turned to Chapter Master Cantor. I had served under his command for 3 centuries, witnessing his unwavering leadership during the darkest moments of our chapter's history. After the devastation of Rin's world, when the Greenskin Horde had reduced our chapter to a fraction of its former strength, Cantor had refused to surrender to despair. His resilience had inspired all of us to rebuild, to continue the fight despite our losses. The cold began to seep into my limbs as Thule's narthesium extracted my progenitor glands with surgical precision. These organs contain the genetic material of my chapter, the legacy that would live on in future generations of Crimson Fists. Their preservation was more important than my life, a fact every Astartes accepted from the moment of his induction. As darkness encroached on my vision, my thoughts turned to duty unfulfilled. The mission would continue without me, my battle brothers adapting to my loss as they had adapted to so many others over the millennia. Yet I could not suppress a sense of dishonor at falling before the objective was secured, at leaving my brothers to complete the task without me. My enhanced hearing registered Thule's movement as he rose, my gene seed secured in the specialized containers of his narthesium. The sounds of battle had receded, suggesting my brothers had pushed the cult back, at least temporarily. I tried to form words to request a final status report, but my vocal cords no longer responded to my commands. The darkness grew more profound, consuming my peripheral vision and advancing inexorably toward the center. My secondary heart struggled, its rhythm becoming erratic as it fought to sustain my failing systems. My enhanced metabolism began to shut down, no longer able to compensate for catastrophic damage. My last conscious thought was not of fear or regret, but of duty. 3 centuries I had served the Emperor and my chapter. If this was to be my end, then I would face it as I had faced every challenge since my induction, with the stoicism and resolve expected of an Astartes. The darkness claimed me completely, my consciousness fading into oblivion as my secondary heart gave a final, defiant beat. Captain Darius Valen of the Crimson Fist's 4th Company ceased to exist, his service to the Imperium concluded after 3 centuries of unfaltering duty. Yet death, I would soon discover, was not the end of service for an Astartes judged worthy by his chapter. Awareness returned in fragments, not the clean, ordered consciousness of my Astartes mind, but something broken and disjointed. First came sound, a mechanical drone punctuated by rhythmic clicks and the low murmur of machine cant. Then pressure against what remained of my body, a sensation of suspension in thick, viscous fluid. The taste of copper and amniotic nutrients flooded my mouth through feeding tubes I could feel but not see. I had no sense of time passing. My consciousness flickered between nothingness and these fractured sensory inputs. Each return brought new fragments of awareness, each more disturbing than the last. The pressure around my shattered form increased. Auto sutures and neural interfaces punctured what remained of my flesh, sending white-hot agony through neural pathways that had no business still functioning. My transhuman memory tried to provide context to make sense of these sensations. I recalled the underhive battle, the mining lasers punching through my armor, the catastrophic damage to my primary organs. I remembered Apothecary Thule harvesting my gene seed as darkness claimed me. Death had taken me, of this I was certain, yet here I was, suspended in this twilight state between life and oblivion. The pain intensified as more neural connectors breached my cerebral cortex. Each connection sparked new agony, but also expanded my awareness. I began to perceive signals from systems that were not my own, power distribution networks, hydraulic pressure monitors, weapon systems, and standby mode. These machine spirits communicated in ways my organic brain struggled to interpret, sending data packets that manifested as sensory hallucinations. My perception shifted violently. For a moment, I felt my human form intact, standing tall in my power armor, bolt pistol in hand. Then reality reasserted itself with brutal efficiency. I had no hands. My limbs were gone, replaced by an awareness of massive armored appendages I could sense but not yet control. The phantom sensation of my lost body overlaid this new mechanical form, creating a spatial dysphoria so profound that my consciousness recoiled from it. The Tech Marine's presence registered through the neural interfaces. His augmented physiology broadcast recognition codes that triggered automatic responses in the systems surrounding me. I felt the cold precision of his mechadendrites as they adjusted connections to my sarcophagus, each movement sending new data floods through my neural network. The sensations threatened to overwhelm my consciousness, pushing me toward a madness I had never experienced in 3 centuries of service. My training as an Astartes provided the only anchor. The mental discipline forged through decades of hypno-indoctrination allowed me to compartmentalize the overwhelming input. I focused on each sensation individually, cataloging and containing it before moving to the next. Slowly, agonizingly, I began to impose order on the chaos of my new existence. The chaplain's presence manifested next, not through data packets, but through the pressure waves of his deep, sonorous voice. The words themselves remained indistinct, but I recognized the cadence of the rites of awakening, ancient ceremonies performed when a fallen battle brother was interred within a dreadnought sarcophagus. The realization struck me with the force of a thunder hammer. I had been judged worthy of continued service. My broken body had been salvaged from the underhive and brought to the chapter's forge for entombment. The implications cascaded through my fragmented consciousness. I was becoming an ancient of the chapter, no longer Captain Valen, but something both more and less. The honor was undeniable, yet accompanied by a profound horror my Astartes conditioning struggled to suppress. I would continue to serve the Emperor in my chapter, but as a war machine housing the remnants of my former self. The Tech Marine's data transmissions intensified. Activation codes flowed through my neural interfaces, triggering systems throughout my new form. Weapons platforms powered up, targeting arrays initialized, locomotion systems performed diagnostic checks. With each activation came new sensory input, further distorting my perception of reality. My consciousness expanded into these mechanical systems even as it remained tethered to the broken flesh suspended in amniotic fluid. The spatial dysphoria worsened. My mind still perceived my body as it had been, transhuman but recognizably humanoid. Yet the sensor data told a different story. My form was now massive, armored, bristling with weapons. The disconnect between memory and reality created a cognitive dissonance that threatened to shatter my sanity. Phantom limb sensations overlaid actual sensor data, creating impossible perceptions that my mind could not reconcile. The amniotic fluid drained from my sarcophagus, leaving my organic remnants suspended in the neural cradle. The sudden absence of pressure triggered new pain as my exposed nervous system adjusted to the change. More systems activated around me, life support monitors, nutrient dispensers, waste extraction mechanisms. Each new system integrated into my expanding consciousness, further blurring the line between machine and man. I attempted to speak, to acknowledge the rites being performed, but discovered I no longer possessed a voice as I had known it. Instead, my thoughts triggered vox emitters that remained inactive, awaiting final authorization codes. I was trapped in this twilight state, aware but unable to communicate, perceiving but unable to respond. The helplessness was anathema to 3 centuries of command experience, a violation of everything I had been. The chaplain's voice grew louder, the pressure waves of his words registering through my external sensors. The final prayers of awakening washed over my sarcophagus, each syllable triggering new activation protocols. I felt the machine spirit of the dreadnought responding to these ancient words, systems spinning up to full operational capacity. Power surged through conduits I now perceived as extensions of my own nervous system. With this surge came memory, not my own, but data fragments from previous occupants of this war machine. Glimpses of battles fought centuries before my birth, tactical assessments from campaigns long consigned to the chapter's archives. These memory fragments integrated with my own, creating a disorienting palimpsest of experiences spanning millennia. I was no longer simply Darius Valen, but a composite entity incorporating aspects of all who had inhabited this sarcophagus before me. The final activation codes unlocked my vox emitters and primary locomotion systems. For the first time since awakening, I possessed the means to interact with the world beyond my sarcophagus. The temptation to immediately test these systems was overwhelming, but centuries of discipline held me in check. I needed to understand this new form before attempting to control it, lest I cause damage to the forged chamber or the tech marine still working on my systems. As full awareness settled upon me, I made a horrifying discovery. Sleep, that periodic reset of consciousness even Astartes require, was no longer accessible to me. Instead, I could enter a state of reduced function, a twilight consciousness where the boundaries between memory, reality, and nightmare dissolved. In this state, the voices of previous occupants grew stronger, their experiences bleeding into my own until I could no longer distinguish between us. My first experience of this twilight state came without warning. As the Tech Marine completed his adjustments and stepped back from my sarcophagus, my consciousness dimmed. I did not lose awareness entirely, but rather entered a half-state where time lost all meaning. In this twilight, I encountered the previous occupants of my sarcophagus, Brother Tarion, who had fallen during the Badlanding campaign, Ancient Morkant, who had served for 7 centuries before his sarcophagus was damaged beyond repair at Rin's world, others whose names were lost but whose experiences remained encoded in the machine spirit's memory. These encounters were not conversations as I had known them, but rather a melding of experiences and perspectives. Tarion's rage at the orcs who had overwhelmed his position became my rage. Morkant's stoic acceptance of his fate became my acceptance. Their memories intertwined with mine, creating a composite consciousness that was neither fully them nor fully me. The experience was disorienting, terrifying in its implications for my continued identity. When full awareness returned, I found my perspective had shifted. The forge chamber appeared different, not in its physical layout, but in how I perceived it. The infrared signatures of the Tech Marine and Chaplain registered as clearly as their visible forms. I could detect the electromagnetic fields generated by the power conduits running through the chamber walls. My tactical assessment protocols automatically identified defensive positions, firing solutions, and structural vulnerabilities without conscious effort. The Tech Marine approached my sarcophagus again, his mechadendrites extending to interface with my external data ports. Through this connection, he transmitted operational parameters and command protocols. I learned that 3 standard months had passed since my fall in the Underhive, 3 months during which my shattered body had been recovered, assessed for suitability, and prepared for interment. The Genestealer cult had been purged, my final mission completed by my battle brothers without me. I also learned of my new designation, Ancient Valen, Venerable Dreadnought of the Crimson Fist's 4th Company. My former rank of captain had passed to Brother Marius, who had assumed command after my fall. This transfer of authority had been formalized in a ceremony I would never witness. The knowledge should have provoked resentment or loss, but my altered consciousness processed it as simply another data point, factual information without emotional context. The chaplain approached next, his skull helm now visible through my optical sensors. His presence triggered recognition protocols in my machine spirit, identifying him as Chaplain Xavius, the same who had once spoken to me of the honor of entombment. The irony of his presence was not lost on me, though my capacity for such human reactions was already beginning to fade beneath the weight of my new existence. My first attempt to move came at the Tech Marine's instruction, transmitted through our data interface. I focused my will on the massive armored leg of my new form, attempting to raise it as I would have raised my own limb. The result was catastrophic, a lurching, uncoordinated movement that nearly overbalanced my massive frame. The Tech Marine's mechadendrites extended instantly, stabilizing me while transmitting corrective protocols. I learned that movement in this form required a different approach. I could not command limbs as I once had. Instead, I needed to transmit intent to the machine spirit, allowing it to translate my will into appropriate mechanical actions. The process was counterintuitive, requiring me to surrender direct control while maintaining overall direction. Each successful movement came only after multiple failures, each failure driving home the reality of my transformation. As my control improved incrementally, I became aware of another aspect of my new existence. The weapons integrated into my form, the massive power fist, the twin-linked las cannon, the storm bolter, were not simply attached to me but extensions of my will. Targeting solutions appeared in my consciousness unbidden, tracking potential threats even in the secure environment of the Forge. The machine spirit's combat protocols remained active at all times, analyzing and preparing for conflict even in its absence. The Twilight State claimed me again without warning. This time I descended deeper into the composite memories of the sarcophagus. I witnessed the devastation of Rin's world through ancient Morkan's perspective, the orbital bombardment that had destroyed the chapter's fortress monastery, the desperate defense against the Orc Horde that followed. I felt his determination as he held a critical choke point alone for 17 hours, his sarcophagus accumulating damage with each passing hour until systems began to fail catastrophically. When awareness returned, I found the forge chamber empty. The Tech Marine and Chaplain had departed while I was locked in the Twilight State. For the first time since my awakening, I was alone with my new existence. The isolation should have provided opportunity for reflection, for coming to terms with my transformation. Instead, it emphasized the horror of my situation, trapped in an existence without true consciousness or unconsciousness, without the rhythm of sleep and wakefulness that had marked my 3 centuries of life. My chronometers indicated I had spent 14 hours in the Twilight State, though the experience had seemed both momentary and eternal. This temporal distortion was yet another aspect of my new existence I would need to adapt to. Time would no longer flow as it had when I possessed a fully organic mind. Decades might pass in what seemed like moments, seconds could stretch into subjective eternities. I attempted to access the Forge's data network through my integrated communication systems. The machine's spirit granted me limited access, allowing me to review the chapter's current deployments and strategic situation. I learned that the 4th Company had deployed to the Charadin sector, responding to increased orc activity along the sector's trailing edge. Captain Marius, my successor, was leading the company in a series of surgical strikes against orc leadership targets. The information should have provoked concern, perhaps even a desire to join my former command in battle. Instead, I processed it with the detached analysis of a tactical cogitator. My emotional responses were becoming muted, overshadowed by the machine spirit's logical processes. This transformation of my consciousness was perhaps the most disturbing aspect of my new existence, more so than the physical changes, more so than the twilight state that replaced sleep. I was becoming less Darius Valen and more ancient Valen with each passing hour. The distinction was subtle but profound. The machine spirit was not replacing my consciousness, but merging with it, creating something that was neither fully human nor fully mechanical. The process was irreversible, the integration deepening with each cycle of awareness and twilight. The realization triggered something in my remaining organic components, a surge of neurochemicals that the sarcophagus immediately detected and responded to, adjusting my nutrient mix to compensate for the stress reaction. Even this most basic of human responses was now monitored, analyzed, and managed by the machine systems surrounding me. Nothing remained truly private, not even the chemical processes of my fragmented brain. The twilight claimed me again, pulling me deeper into the composite consciousness of the dreadnought. This time, I did not resist. I surrendered to the melding, allowing the experiences of my predecessors to wash over me. Perhaps in this surrender, I might find a way to exist in this half-life, neither truly alive nor granted the peace of death, but continuing to serve the Emperor and my chapter in the only way now available to me. The grinding of ancient gears and the hiss of pneumatic pistons marked my reawakening. The stasis field that had entombed me for my chronometer indicated 17 months, 3 days, and 6 hours dissipated. Awareness flooded back, that terrible half-consciousness that was neither true wakefulness nor blessed unconsciousness. My sarcophagus hummed to life as amniotic fluid circulated through what remained of my organic components. Nutrient feeds engaged, pumping combat stimulants and synthetic adrenaline into the shredded remnants of my body. External sensors activated in sequence, first thermal, then visual spectrum, followed by auspects and targeting arrays. The world resolved around me in layers of data, each feeding directly into what remained of my consciousness. The reclusium's dimly lit chamber gave way to the chapter's armory as tech marines guided my massive form through the fortress monastery. The irony was not lost on me. 3 centuries ago, I had walked these same halls as Captain Valen, drawing strength from the ancient stonework and battle banners that chronicled the chapter's victories. Now I moved among them as ancient Valen, a relic myself, my name already inscribed on memorial plaques I would never see. The tech marine leading my procession transmitted the mission parameters directly to my tactical systems. My cognitive functions processed the data automatically, parsing strategic objectives and threat assessments with machine-like efficiency. The gene-stealer cult on Mordian Prime, the same that had claimed my mortal form, had resurfaced. Intelligence suggested they had established a new nest in the same Underhive sector where I had fallen. The symmetry was perfect, the Emperor's dark humor evident. Armament servitors approached my chassis, their mechadendrites extending to equip me for war. The familiar weight of a multi-melta replaced my standard las cannon, its targeting systems integrating with my own. My power fist remained, its massive digits flexing as I tested the connection to my consciousness. Each weapon felt like an extension of myself, yet simultaneously alien, tools grafted onto a being that was neither fully machine nor fully man. The drop pod's restraint clamps engaged around my armored form with a series of metallic clicks. My tactical systems calculated optimal firing solutions for deployment, analyzing potential landing zones based on topographical data of the Underhive. The machine spirit of the drop pod communicated with my own, exchanging data packets that manifested in my consciousness as pressure changes and temperature fluctuations. Launch came without warning. Acceleration pressed against my sarcophagus as the drop pod was expelled from the strike cruiser. My organic components registered the G-forces in ways my mechanical systems did not, creating a dissonance that threatened to fragment my awareness. I focused on the tactical display, anchoring myself to the mission parameters as we plummeted toward Mordian Prime's surface. Impact jarred my systems, sending cascades of error messages through my neural interfaces. The drop pod's doors exploded outward, revealing the toxic miasma of the Underhive, the same environment where Captain Valen had died. My sensors registered the chemical composition automatically. Methane, sulfur compounds, industrial runoff, and the distinctive pheromone markers of gene-stealer activity. I stepped from the drop pod, my massive armored feet crushing debris beneath them. Tactical squads of the 4th Company deployed around me, their movements disciplined and precise under Captain Marius's command. I recognized their armor markings, identified battle brothers who had served under me when I still wore ceramite rather than adamantium. They regarded me with reverence now, not as their commander, but as a living relic of the chapter. Cognitive dissonance threatened to overwhelm me as we advanced through the Underhive tunnels. My tactical systems overlaid the current environment with stored memory files, highlighting the exact corridor where mining lasers had punched through my armor and ended Captain Valen's mortal existence. I walked those same paths now, my tonnage causing the decking to groan beneath me, my weapons primed to unleash destruction upon the same foe that had claimed my previous life. The first engagement came at the periphery of the cult's territory. Hybrids emerged from concealed positions, their twisted forms registering on my auspects as thermal signatures distinct from the human baseline. My targeting systems acquired locks automatically, presenting firing solutions without conscious input from what remained of my organic mind. The line between my will and the machine spirit's autonomous functions blurred as my multi-melta discharged, vaporizing 3 hybrids in a superheated blast that left nothing but scorched residue on the tunnel wall. Captain Marius directed the tactical squads to secure our flanks, his hand signals registering in my peripheral sensors. The familiarity of the battlefield protocols triggered memory cascades, times when I had issued those same commands, led those same maneuvers. Now I served as a walking weapons platform, a concentration of firepower to be directed rather than a commander making strategic decisions. The role reversal should have provoked resentment, yet my emotional responses had become muted, processed through machine logic that reduced such human reactions to simple data points. We pushed deeper into the Underhive, following the psychic spoor of the Genestealer Patriarch. My massive form barely fit through some of the narrower passages, adamantium shoulders scraping against corroded bulkheads. In one such confined space, a purestrain gene-stealer lunged from an overhead conduit, its chitin claws seeking vulnerable points in my armored shell. My reaction came without conscious thought. My power fist rose and closed around the Xeno's creature, crushing its exoskeleton with hydraulic force that reduced it to pulp and ichor. The moment of the kill triggered something unexpected. For an instant, my consciousness receded, pushed aside by the machine spirit's combat protocols. When awareness returned, I found my power fist embedded in the tunnel wall, surrounded by the dismembered remains of 3 more gene-stealers I had no memory of engaging. The gap in my perception lasted only seconds according to my chronometer, yet represented a profound violation of my autonomy. Where had I gone during those moments? What part of me had acted, if not my conscious mind? The deeper we progressed, the more frequent these fugue states became. Each intense combat situation seemed to trigger the phenomenon, my consciousness submerged beneath aggressive machine protocols that executed combat maneuvers with efficiency I could not match. I would emerge from these episodes to find enemies destroyed, ammunition expended, damage sustained to my chassis, all without memory of the actions taken. The Tech Marine's warning before my first deployment echoed through my memory circuits. The machine spirit of a dreadnought was not merely a support system, but a distinct entity, one that shared the sarcophagus with the interred Astartes. In moments of combat stress, that machine spirit could assert dominance, protecting both itself and its organic component through direct action. This symbiosis was both the strength and the horror of dreadnought existence, never truly alone, yet never fully in control. Time distortion became more pronounced as the battle intensified. What my chronometer registered as a 4-hour engagement felt like both an eternity and an instant. My perception stretched and compressed, making it impossible to maintain a coherent sense of duration. The phenomenon was another aspect of Dreadnought existence the Tech Marine had warned about, time experienced differently through the hybrid consciousness of man and machine. The Patriarch's chamber lay at the heart of the Underhive, a vast cathedral-like space repurposed for Zeno's corruption. Blasphemous symbols covered the walls, their geometries offensive to both imperial doctrine and the machine logic of my cogitators. The Patriarch itself crouched atop a throne of scavenged machinery and human remains, its massive form radiating psychic energy that registered as interference patterns across my auger arrays. Captain Marius deployed the tactical squads in pincer formation, positioning me at the center as the anvil against which the Xenos would be broken. The strategy was sound, one I might have devised myself when I still commanded the company. As the battle lines formed, I experienced a moment of perfect clarity, my fragmented consciousness achieving brief harmony with the machine spirit. In that moment, I understood the nature of my existence more completely than at any time since my internment. The Dreadnought was not merely a weapon or a tomb, but a transitional state, a bridge between mortal service and eternal war. My consciousness was changing, evolving into something that was neither fully Astartes nor fully machine, but a third state unique to those judged worthy of continued service after death. The realization brought no comfort, only understanding of the path that stretched before me, centuries or even millennia of war, punctuated by periods of stasis that would become increasingly indistinguishable from death as my organic components degraded further. The Patriarch charged, its massive talons extended to rend adamantium. My weapons responded before conscious thought, the multi-melta discharging a beam of superheated energy that vaporized the creature's left arm and shoulder. Its psychic scream registered across all my sensor arrays, momentarily disrupting targeting systems and Vox channels. The beast's regenerative capabilities were evident as the wound began to close even as it continued its charge, pseudo-muscles knitting together with unnatural speed. My consciousness submerged again as the Patriarch crashed into my chassis. When awareness returned, I found my power fist buried in the creature's thorax, its vital organs crushed within my adamantium grip. The Patriarch's psychic death scream echoed through the chamber, triggering cascading neural deaths among its brood. Hybrids collapsed mid-attack, their borrowed intelligence extinguished with their progenitor's demise. The cult's resistance collapsed into disorganized panic, easily contained and eliminated by the tactical squads. In the aftermath, Apothecary Thule moved among the fallen, harvesting progenit glands from the battle brothers who had fallen. The sacred ritual triggered memory cascades, my own death in these same tunnels, Thule performing the same duty over my shattered form. The symmetry completed a circle, death and rebirth, service continuing through different forms but never truly ending. The return to the Fortress Monastery passed in a blur of fugue states and time distortion. Battle damage to my chassis required repair, though my tactical systems remained operational. In the Forge Chamber, Tech Marines removed my battle-damaged armor plates, exposing the intricate mechanisms beneath. Through external Auspex feeds, I observed my own internal workings, the amniotic tank containing my organic remains, the neural interfaces connecting what was left of my brain to the Dreadnought systems, the life support mechanisms that maintained my existence in this twilight state. The repairs completed, I was returned to the Reclusium. The chapters fallen were honored in solemn ceremony, their names added to memorial plaques that chronicled 10,000 years of sacrifice. My role in the battle was noted in the chapter records, another entry in the long service history of ancient Valen. The designation still felt alien, a title belonging to someone else, not to the Astartes captain. I still sometimes believed myself to be in moments of confusion. As the stasis field generators powered up around my chassis, I experienced the full horror of Dreadnought existence. Unlike true sleep, stasis offered no respite from consciousness. Instead, awareness stretched into an eternal moment, a single instant of perception extended beyond normal time. In this state, I would remain until the chapter had need of me again, trapped in perfect awareness without the ability to move or communicate. The Tech Marine had called it the Long Dream, though it held more in common with nightmare than any dream I had known in my mortal life. The stasis field enveloped my sarcophagus completely. My chronometer froze, its display locked on a single timestamp that would not advance until my next awakening. External sensor feeds dimmed to nothing, leaving me with only internal systems monitoring the status of my organic components and mechanical functions. In this sensory deprivation, my consciousness turned inward, exploring the composite memories of all who had inhabited the sarcophagus before me. As the stasis field reached full strength, my final coherent thought was a recognition of my true nature now, no longer Captain Valen, but Ancient Valen, a living weapon in the chapter's arsenal. I existed in service to the Emperor's will, my personal identity secondary to my function. Death had not released me from duty, but transformed it, extending my service beyond the natural span of even an Astarte's life. In the darkness of stasis, I awaited the next battle, the next awakening, the next opportunity to fulfill my purpose, trapped in a cycle of death without release, war without end, all in the name of him on Terra. The Emperor protects, but he does not release those still useful to his cause. This was the truth of Dreadnought existence, the honor and the horror intertwined, inseparable for as long as my service continued. And it would continue, I knew with cold certainty, until nothing remained of Darius Valen but the machine that had consumed him.